Chapter 25 Monsters. The dragon descended on steel wings, its nostrils gusting with smoke and fire. It was loud, so loud that Quen had to clasp her ears, but as afraid as she was, she could not take her eyes away from the magnificent creature as it landed in the muddy square. Rouve shuddered, the ground trembled underfoot, and the rain went whirling in every direction. Its claws dug furrows in the earth, as sharp as swords, and just as long. A roar emanated from deep in its belly, vibrating the air and turning it hot with the furnace warmth of its breath. Never in her born days had Quen beheld such a spectacle. Even Yabor, who professed he came from a different age, an age of wonders and the stars within man's grasp, gazed up at the dragon with awe. Then, as the roar died away, and the air grew still and the ground ceased shaking, Quen saw something she did not expect. A hatch opened in the dragon's flank, a battered metal scale that gleamed blue in the light, and out stepped the Knights of Macragge, to the fear and wonder of all who saw them. She held Yabor's hand, grasping it tightly, as myth gave way to truth, and she started to believe that what he had said might be real. Some of the citizens fled, overwhelmed at the sight, fear welling up until it threatened to drown them. Quen was amongst those who stayed, more curious than afraid, as she stared through the gaps in the crowds. She had run when she was told, but had come back upon seeing Rita return to the square, with the castellan and his warriors behind her. "I have to go," she said, provoking a curious look from her husband, who then understood and released her hand. "I have to try to help." Quen slowly edged through the crowds until she was past the closely packed bodies and confronted by the dragon. It radiated heat, and its wings were rigid, not leathery or scaly or attached to clawed pinions. Bulky weapons hung beneath them, for what else could they be? As black and hard as soot-stained anvils. It was no dragon, but actually a ship. A metal ship that sailed the sky as readily as a galleon would sail the ocean. Not that she had seen either before. Pilliam was lying on the ground in the dragon's shadow, collapsed in a pool of his own blood. She hesitated as one of the knights regarded her, his face as grave as winter ice. He and another warrior had formed an honour guard, their backs to Pilliam and their blades drawn. They were scarred and battle-worn, but still emanated a sense of threat and power. Rita was talking with one of them. He had an eye patch, and Quen recognised him as the Lord Seneschal, though she couldn't remember his name.
"She's asking them not to kill us,"
Yabor whispered softly in her ear. She hadn't realised he had followed her, and Quen almost jumped when she heard his voice. "Would they?" she asked, suddenly afraid again.
"They take honour extremely seriously, and have been betrayed."
"But they are good men. They saved us."
"They are not men, not as we would understand them. What they must have seen and endured to reach Aegon, I cannot imagine."
"I spoke to him," said Quen. "He did not seem so different." She shrugged off Yabor's hand, recognizing in him the same dread that kept everyone else at bay, and took a tentative step forwards. The Knights of Macragge were not the glorious heroes they had been after saving Faradim from the Bone Swine. They had become foreign and frightening. Other. Quen vowed she would not succumb to such small-minded terror.
"Please," she called out to one of the knights, "I am the Medicus."
Quen saw beyond the knight to where his lord knelt down in the dirt, clasping Pilliam's hand in a warrior's grip. He was whispering something. It looked like a prayer, or perhaps an oath of vengeance.
"He is beyond healing,"
the knight told her coldly, and Quen shrank back into the crowd, and the awe and the majesty of it all dimmed. There were no dragons here, but there were monsters. Not the monsters who had come up from the ground and attacked the city, but the ones who had turned their weapons on an injured man, and who had watched and done nothing as he was wounded near to death. The monsters fear created.
Quen stopped herself. She pushed to the front of the crowd again.
You have injured. Let me help.
She stood her ground, even when the knight began to approach. It was then that the lord looked up and gestured for her to be allowed through. She nodded as she did so, careful not to meet their gaze for too long, in case they considered that a challenge. The smell on them. Sweat and heat, but something else, a chemical odour that stung her nose. It was heady, and she found herself trembling. As Quen approached the lord of the knights, Pelium gave her a side glance and nodded. Standing on the outside of the exchange, Rita had the good sense to stay out of it.
"I am Sicarius," said the lord knight, and she could tell he was measuring her, her worth, her sincerity, in a glance. "Pelium is dying. There is nothing you can do for him," he told her flatly, though she thought she heard suppressed anger in his voice. "But I have others who need a physician."
He gestured to the ship's open hatch, where one of the knights sat slumped, his left arm cradled close to his chest, his eyes deep wells of pain. Rents and splits in his armour suggested savage wounds. He turned to look at Quen, his face as stern as the granite cliff, but as grey as stone, too.
I will do everything I can, said Quen,
surprised at her tears. Perhaps they were for Pelium. He looked ahead, as if seeing some mythic afterlife. Or perhaps it was simply the darkness encroaching, and he was pale as chalk. It seemed appalling in its way, that a warrior such as that, so indomitable, so beyond mortal frailty, could be killed at all.
"Do not weep for him," Sicarius told her. "He died with honour. None of us here can ever ask for more than that."
He called to one of his men, and she was ushered away to the ship. Her last sight was of Pelium uttering his last words. His hand shook until Sicarius clasped it. Pelium had been strong, but now his grip was weak and infirm. Injuries that would have killed a lesser man 100 times over ravaged his pale body. Not even Venatio could have saved him.
"I know,"
he breathed, so quietly that Sicarius had to lean in to hear him.
"I know,"
he repeated, his last breaths shallow, sighing rasps.
"I thought I was being punished. But Elicus sent me with you to prove to myself that I was worthy of this."
He reached out and touched the white sigil emblazoned on the captain's armor. Then his arm drooped and fell. Sicarius bowed his head.
"Cato..."
Vedea had just emerged through the throng of onlookers. She stood a little way back, out of respect.
"Are you going to tell me he fought with honour?"
"You already know he did," she said. "The Baron is dead. Scarfell and his men just found him and two of his guards. The guards were burned, Cato, as if by an energy weapon. But the Baron, his body was little more than dust, as if it had aged centuries and seconds. And the vizier is missing."
Sicarius looked up, not at Vedea, but at Decius. Decius kept his voice low.
"It's them."
"You asked why we weren't swarming with Necrons," said Sicarius.
"They can't swarm. They are dormant."
"The Necrons are here."
Vedea only sounded a little surprised.
"They have always been here, Vedea," Sicarius replied. "And they need the same thing we do." "The power source," said Decius. "Kellerman's blood, and we handed it to them when we slaughtered the greenskins."
"Not them. Him," said Vedea. "The vizier, Nehepkau."
Sicarius got to his feet. He turned to Vedea.
"Fenian is staying. He can barely walk, let alone fight. His presence should be enough to keep you safe.
I'm not worried about that. We can trust Scarfell, and I have Rita and Geralt.
Regardless, watch him, watch them. He nodded to the crowds, who had begun to disperse. Vandius is near death, and I cannot... She rested her hand on his arm.
I will keep vigil over them, Cato. You have to stop him.
Sicarius held her gaze for a few moments. Then he turned and headed for the ship. He had no doubt when the Hepcow was headed.